Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado, to today's episode. Founded in 2016, Zoma's team of creative experts specialise in digital strategy, web design, branding, content creation and performance marketing. Zoma's journey began humbly with its founders working from a small attic space fuelled by passion and determination. Armed with little more than laptops, whiteboards and big ideas, they sought to challenge traditional marketing norms by offering innovative digital solutions. Over the last 3 years, Zoma has transformed into one of Ireland's and Northern Ireland's largest and most recognisable digital marketing agencies. Currently working across a range of industries including corporate, health, wellness, fashion, food and hospitality, tourism, sport and events, construction, property, agriculture, medical and manufacturing. Sitting in front of me is David Kieran, founder and managing director of Zoma. David's belief in a people-first approach has been instrumental in building a company that values talent, collaboration and customer success. Combining digital expertise with youthful enthusiasm and a desire to break the corporate mold, Zoma have ditched the traditional suit and tie approach. A unique approach to work-life balance helps the team flex their creative muscles, which results in distinctive brands and ideas. David, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Aidan, thanks for having me.
No problem at all. A good Dundalk man.
Yeah, strong Dundalk accent come to the fore here on this podcast, yeah.
Right. As a starting point, right, in simple terms, what does Zoma do and how is it different from what's already out there?
Yeah, so look, Zoma, we're a full-service marketing agency. We go into companies and provide a whole suite of services, everything from web design, digital marketing strategies, content creation, you name it. If it's anything to do with online, we probably can do it for the company. We usually come into companies maybe initially with just maybe one type of service, where it could be just a web design project, but then it just flows from there when they get a really good working relationship with us. How we differentiate ourselves is probably a creative element and the team of talent that we have. You mentioned how important work-life balance is and finding the right talent. That was a huge part of when we were developing the brand as Zoma, was to make sure we attracted the best talent. But when they became involved in Zoma and working in Zoma, that we created the best creative environment for the people within Zoma. And how we go about that is, you know, we offer a full physical and mental well-being packages to all of our staff. So you actively see the whole lot of us, you know, in the gym doing workouts together. We do a lot of social events, but we create such a fun, thriving environment where we work that people want to come into the workplace. You know, we offer hybrid working, but they actually love coming into the office. They nearly feel like they're going to miss out on the crack in the office, you know.
It is important in the creative, though, isn't it, that people are working in an office together?
Oh, 100%. Like, you think of how different people view advertising and marketing. Someone might view it very different to the person across from you in the room. So you need to have a team working on projects, bouncing ideas off each other to make sure you're getting a really good product or service at the end of it. So it's so important that you take a team collaborative approach, and we do that with all our projects. So you could have an entry point coming in where it's a web designer or a marketer, but then you're going to have your graphic team, your strategists, you're going to have, you know, directors coming in. Like, we in our office designed it that it's there's no like different areas or segments, it's all open space, so everyone's bouncing off each other. You wouldn't know where you'd be sitting in one day nearly, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Because we want people talking to each other, we want people bouncing ideas off each other, we want people challenging each other. You know, we're going to be very critical of each other when it comes to campaigns as well, and you need to build your team up that they can accept criticism as well, but in a, you know, in a good way. You know, you're trying to make them better. I love sport. I'm, you know, very involved in my local GAA club and playing and everything like that, and I bring a lot of elements from sport and fitness into how we manage and work the business. And I always felt that when you're challenged, you know, in a right way, it definitely brings on you as a in sport, but then bring that into business. I've seen such a positive response from our team when you do challenge them, and, you know, and get them to really focus on how they can make things better.
What were the roots to the business? Was it yourself at the start?
Yeah, so look, starting off, I came out of DCU with a degree in business and marketing, and really didn't know what I wanted to do. Probably like a lot of graduates, just kind of lost coming out of college. And my dad had his own farm and hire business, and I got working with it, and he was an unbelievable entrepreneur, has a brilliant business there now at the minute. So I probably got a lot of learnings from him. But look, I got the travelling bug like a lot of young people, and myself and my wife went off to Vancouver. And when I was over in Vancouver, I got working with a marketing company over there. And when I was back here, I had worked on, in my final year, a project on developing your own business idea. And our business idea was a hire compare website. And I seen the difficulties in actually going and trying to get a website back in 2013, to know how to market it, all the different challenges that were then in Ireland at that time. So I was like, when I got working with this company in Vancouver, I seen the different softwares and systems that they were using, and I was like, Jesus, we are miles behind in terms of technology and offerings and service offering. So I was like, look, the wheel goes in your mm-hmm. mind, and you're like, okay, this could be an opportunity to bring some of this back home. And at the time, Shopify was, it's the biggest e-commerce platform worldwide at the minute, only behind Amazon. And I was like, okay, exposed to Shopify over in Vancouver. Brought it back here to Ireland in 2016. I was probably the only Shopify partner in Europe at that stage selling the Shopify system. And straight away, I could see it starting to grow and build. And like that, my business started to build. And in 2016, in November 2016, I set up Marketing For Me as a company. When I think of the name now, I'm like, God, how do they work with a name like that? But look, it stuck. It went really well.
And you're
well.
A marketing person.
I know, yeah. Probably just didn't have the right experience at that stage. But look, I rolled with it and started doing web design projects for friends, family, any business people that my dad might have worked with. So I started close, you know, and it was like, look, probably doing it on the cheap, you mm-hmm. know, as a side gig. And then it started to grow and grow, and people really started to see what I was doing. And I think I was very unique in my way of going and get business. In the tech industry, a lot of people stay behind the computer, mm-hmm. you know, and they'd send emails, and they might get, you know, people to cold call for them or like that. I was different. I was going around with my flyers, door to door, knocking round and dock. And loud, and that really worked, you know, coming into the people and that old approach.
People
of
do business with people.
Exactly. People yeah. engage with people. Yeah. They probably got a sense of my personality, you know, the genuine trust element was there then as well. And I knew I could deliver on something that they didn't have. So I knew I was bringing a really good product or service to them. And I just built up my base from there, and the business grew nicely. I changed my attic in my home house. I had a whiteboard up on the wall, and I always refer to this, and anyone starting out in business, I used to write that all I needed was 2 websites a month in order to get a wage out of it. And that was my goal, and I shattered that goal within a couple of months. But that was my starting point, was that whiteboard on the wall. And it's such an easy thing people can do, to have notebooks, diaries there now. Set your goals and targets straight away for your business. And I smashed it. So I started then working across different industries, different size companies, and it really just started to grow then, and the brand got out there. And my friend across the road, who I've been friends with for since I was 6 months old, was a graphic designer at the time, and I was getting really busy with the web design work, and I was like, look, I need some help with graphics work, because it's nearly a secondary mm-hmm. service to the website service. And he is just come out of an engineering company he was working with, and I was like, look, let's get together and start working on projects. Two of us came together and just started, you know, growing and growing, and we nearly had a graphic design service, web design service. And then probably the tipping point was in 2019, our other company director, Richie, we were seeing a huge demand for video content. So video content then was starting to really come onto the scene, and the importance of it was really coming. Social media was obviously blown up at that stage. And the three of us came together and were like, look, why are we all doing our individual things? Why don't we do something together? So we had the web design and marketing expertise. We had the graphic design expertise. We had the content expertise. Let's build a brand solely around like full service that we can go in and do everything for companies. And we sat down in a pub in Dundalk, the three of us, and we were just brainstorming ideas right before the pandemic. And originally the idea was Zomi, Z-O-M-I. Just didn't hit the spot with us. So we kept testing, changing. And Zoma just hit us. I don't know where it hit us from. And people always ask, does it mean anything? Where did it come from? It came from nowhere. It's a buzzword.
A few pints in
it. That's it, in the local pub, yeah. And that was it. We rolled it. We said, look, this is our name. We're going to go with this. This is the brand. And the biggest, I think, learning that anyone can take when they're doing a rebrand or even starting a brand, the three of us sat there and wrote out, what way do we want our brand to be perceived? How do we want our brand to be valued? You know, what way do we want people, when they see the Zoma logo, what do they feel, what do they think about Zoma? And we wrote down everything about what way we wanted a company to work. And that was back in 2021. And to this day, we still stand by the same values. And they're all about well-being, a brilliant place to work, investment in the best talent, being as creative as possible, and unleashing wild ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no idea is a bad idea. And that stands to us today, you know, and we haven't moved away from any of them practices or principles. I remember when, in the pandemic, the three of us are running around the field and probably spaced out whatever it was 5 years
trying
about.
To thrash out
yeah,
ideas.
Yeah. But that was where, you know, people say when you go on your walks yeah. with your partner, with your dog, when you're in having a swim in the sea, ideas hit you from yeah. nowhere. You don't know where you can get an idea. I'm unfortunate, a lot of my ideas actually come when I'm lying awake at night time and I can't get to sleep. But look, that's where so you
take
never
them
know
where you get them.
That's it. You never know where you get ideas from. And look, Zoma just grew from there. So that's kind of where it all started off back in 2021.
And then how was COVID in terms of the business?
Look, COVID was probably a massive drive of revenue and awareness for our business. Everything had to go online. Everything had to go digital. You think of takeaways, restaurants, they all had to have online ordering systems brought in. The government brought out a number of supports to help digitalise companies. So there was trading online vouchers from the local enterprise office. There was Enterprise Ireland supports to bring your business online. And we really tapped into that industry or into them grants from the get-go. I brought on 3 sales lads within a matter of 2 months with all these grants brought out. And they were literally going around business to business trying to get these grants secured for them to bring their company online and in a better place online. And our business skyrocketed over COVID. And look, there's so many unfortunate stories of business disappeared in that. We scaled our business massively in COVID and we got ahead of it, a lot of people early as well. And it wasn't just in a localised level. We were doing this nationally. You know, we had clients over Mayo, Galway, Cork. It wasn't just around Dundalk and Loudoun in the northeast. We scaled it massively in terms of nationwide. And we started, you know, developing websites, online ordering system, booking system, e-commerce websites. And once we got in the door, we made sure we stayed in the door. And that's the biggest thing. So many people focus on getting the new customer the whole time. We're very of the opinion, if you get in the door with someone, make sure you stay in the door with them.
And get the share of wallet.
Exactly, yeah. There's no point if you do a good service. I always refer to your local plumber or your local carpenter or whatever it is. If he comes in and does a good job for you, you're probably going to refer him to 2 or 3 people. We are very of the same opinion. Our referral market strategy is massive. We feel if we come in and do a good job for someone, it nearly leads to 2 or 3 jobs out of it. And look, I'm a marketing company, an advertising company. We probably don't spend that much in terms of our own advertising and marketing because we don't have to, because we've such a really positive referral marketing system, review system, that nearly gets the business in itself. So we don't have to go and spend a huge amount of money on our, you know, cold calling marketing spend. We do a good job for someone, we know we're going to get business out of it. And it's worked today.
And the thing about, you know, you mentioned the explosion of the business during COVID and things like that. Do you think a lot of that too was that you were a very young company and you know, therefore you didn't have a kind of a legacy mindset to say, ah, no, that, you know, it'll be all right, that'll be gone tomorrow, and sure, we wouldn't want to invest in it. You kind of, in a certain way, had no choice. It was there in front of you and you just kept on taking the business.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, you know, it always would have been seen as a very traditionalised, you know, like there was very few young, energetic, bright companies there. And I think the rebrand probably helped us as well because it was a very attractive brand, you know, the whole big attractive bright pink colours and all that kind of stuff probably stood out for us. And we also were bringing new systems, ideas to the Irish market that weren't really there at all. So when we were going in and presenting, say, the Shopify system compared to how WordPress or more traditional CMS systems worked, people were like, Jesus, what am I doing? Do you know, why am I using these systems? Yeah. And even nowadays, we're very brutal and upfront with the systems and software that you use for your business. And in Ireland, we probably are reluctant to change. It is a cultural thing. But when you see the difference that can be made so easily by bringing in a new software and how easy it is to migrate from one system to the other, it's seamless, really, to be honest, and there's not much work in it. I think that really stood us out from anyone else and definitely made us very attractive to companies over COVID. And we were very brutal and upfront, and I am like that. Yeah. And I'll go into companies and like they'll say to me, look, we have a marketing spend of €500 a month. And I'm like, what do you expect to get out of that? Like there's no point in me coming in here and trying to work something out of it. Like if you're not spending, say, a couple of grand a month, how do you expect to compete?
You grow your business.
Grow your business, drive your business. So we wouldn't actually take on a client in that area because we just know we're not going to get the results that they need or want. Mm. So you need to have that. And I think that really stood to us as well, that when we got in with the business, there were a business that really were kind of focused on going digital.
Mm.
So there's, you know, like you learn as you go in business and you're always learning. But there's so many times we went into a business and they're probably reluctant to turn digital in a full investment route. And look, you have a negative experience, you know, you're never going to have positive experiences, but you learn from it. Whereas we know if a company's really thinking they're going to embrace technology, their digital presence, you know you're onto a winner straight away, because what you're going to do, your skill set, everything that you're bringing into that company, they're going to appreciate it. And that's the big thing as well.
And when it comes to that, like when a customer comes in, I suppose you've got a few, there'll be the ones that are reluctant digital people, right? And that, you know, or there might be people who are, you know they need to go digital, but don't know what that means, right? Yeah. So what's the customer journey then for that type of a person?
Yeah, so like we would always start coming in as like a consultation, sit down with them and see where is their business currently at, look at their system, software, the online presence, their social media, take an overview of the whole business and see where can they get the most value of going in terms of digitalization. Mm-hmm. So start small. I would always say, you go into a business nowadays, like I was getting a load of concrete there a couple of weeks ago and there was piles of dockets and invoices and supplier notes and all this kind of stuff on the table. And you're scratching your head being like, how are we still in this day and age for that? Like how are they not embracing systems and software? And they're not realising how more efficient they become, how more profitable they become, how they probably could reduce on time, you know, spent on waste, basically. I'd always be the opinion, if you're doing the same thing multiple times in one day, it probably can be automated. You know, so that's where we come in with a full overview of the business and see where can they get the most value out of. It could be upgrading their website. It could be updating their CRM system. It could be, you know, tweaking their marketing strategy. You never know where a business is probably not focused on. Like, we go into companies and they could have a really good digital strategy there at the minute, but there's one area is actually pulling the profitability down massively. Mm. We would identify that area, fix that area, and then in turn, all the other ones would become more profitable as well.
Yeah.
So it's really going in with a kind of holistic overview of everything, seeing where it is at, and then providing recommendations and guides and adding the best value. Like a lot of companies we would go in and work with have marketing people and you know, digital team, IT team, whatever it is. And you don't want to come in and obviously step on their toes. But we want to come in and be a consultant and a guide to, you know, benefit the company, but also maybe upskill the staff. Mm. So that's an area of business sometimes engage with us is, can you come in and make our team better in terms of upskilling and training them? And we provide workshops, you know, and all that for upskilling staff. So that's another huge area where you get in with a business. Another one was when COVID happened and you're on about scaling your business and been upfront, like, I don't mind saying this, but companies could be paying marketing managers 60, 80, 100 grand a year. And that marketing manager could be outsourcing everything to an agency. Whereas if they actually just engaged with the agency and kind of got rid of the marketing manager, how much of a saving could that be? They could be paying a quarter of the amount of what they're actually paying in his salary, plus all the costs that they're outsourcing to an agency, and be getting a far better return out of it. So that's an area we pitch a lot as well, is, okay, look at your marketing team, look at your marketing department, look what you're
spending. Do you need to do it yourself, or is it better off being done by somebody else?
Exactly. Do you know, like, and are they, look, sometimes your marketing team aren't going to do a good job, so you have to look at, right, are they going to be better outsourcing it and having a full agency managing your marketing department? And then you can worry about other areas of your business, knowing that you're in good hands with a marketing agency. You're not worried about, oh, John didn't come in at 9 o'clock on the hour, you know, and where is my marketing post, or where is all this going? You know, you can focus on the other areas of your business.
And do you get many customers coming in that have unrealistic expectations of what digital could mean?
100%. there's companies that are reluctant to change, but then there's ones that, okay, we're open to change, but they don't realise the investment and what's involved in it.
Yeah.
So a simple thing, like I was doing a brainstorming with a client before, and I was like, look, Your business would be brilliant for Instagram. You know, you should be going, developing reels, videos, you know, putting out really good content. But you have to realise you have to engage with someone in video. Mm. You have to script. You have to develop out that content. You have to shoot it. You have to edit it. Then you have to break it down into social posts. You have to put it across all your platforms. Then you have to go into boosting campaigns, you know, putting out whatever ads. And then that's only a one-off. Then you could be shooting another video a couple of weeks later
and you have to do it all again.
And they don't realise the investment and time that goes into it. And that's where you just need to be upfront, you know, with the budgets that's involved, with the investment that's involved. And companies have to say, right, if I'm going for it, there's no point in half doing it. There's no point, as I say, falling between two bar stools. You go for it or you don't go for it. Because it's too competitive of a landscape now. Traditional advertising has fallen. There's so many different media platforms out there now where people are going to get their news, their content, and you have to be, you know, standing out. If you think someone scrolls through their phone, if you don't hit them within 3 to 4 seconds, they're gone. They're on to the next piece of content. So you have to be very clever in how you hook and catch someone and then lead them down the journey, because you could catch them on Instagram to come to your website and your website could be terrible.
Terrible, yeah.
So,
it's, you know, it has to be seamless.
It has to be seamless the whole way through to get that conversion.
What were the hard parts of the journey on the business so far?
The hardest part probably is, like for myself, is balancing your, you know, your work and your life and your personal life. Anyone that starts out in business knows that, you know, it's a journey and it's a hard slog at times. Being the owner and the founder of the company, there's hard decisions have to be made as well. You know, like in terms of recruitment, in terms of scaling the business, in terms of where I would have spent money on the company and it failed, learning from that. I'm only 33 when I started the company. What was that, 2016, 7 years ago? I was only 26. So I had no managerial, financial kind of experience at a high level.
Yeah.
You know, look, I obviously had my degree and working with companies and stuff, but in terms of financial planning, budgeting, taking on a workforce of up to 15 people, then monthly salaries coming out each month, planning to have X amount of money in the bank every month.
Yeah.
They're things you don't really do in college, you know, like you don't plan for that. And they are hard learnings, you know, and there's months there, like in our industry, we start a project and you could carry a project for 6 to 12 months and not get paid for 6 to 12 months, but your salaries are coming out for them 6
month,
to 12 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all that kind of planning and managing that is a huge part of my business. And I used to love being part of the, you know, the design and the creative element. But as your business grows, you know, you become a manager, you become managing people, managing teams. And shifting and moving away from that was probably a big change for me. Because I'm not, being honest, I don't get to be as creative as I used to be. And it was an area I loved. So I'm now dealing with people and dealing with customer relations and all that kind of stuff. And that can be a big change, you know, from someone who was in design going into a really focused managerial role.
Yeah.
But look, I've embraced it. I love it now, you know. But that pivot and change was probably a hard area that I needed to upskill myself in leadership skills, in, you know, planning and dealing with communication of teams. And then also as your workforce grows, there's so many different laws, employment laws, all the stuff that you have to get familiar with that you're just not familiar with. Hiring staff, contracts, all this kind of stuff that you're just like, wow, you didn't realise what's involved in it. And it's only as you scale and grow your business that you really get exposed to it. You know, so they are definitely learnings.
And when you go back, to the tree, you're sitting in the pub and coming together to form Zoma. When you look back at it now, do you think it was a mistake maybe to not have somebody at that stage with the kind of the financial experience that, you know, would have been able to take that from the go? Because I see it all the time. People who set up, entrepreneurs who set up business, you have to wear a lot of hats, right? And nobody can be good with all those hats. And, you know, sometimes you see the clever people sometimes go, listen, I don't know one end of a set of books from the other.
Yeah.
I need to be focused here, not here. We'll get somebody who can do that.
Yeah, look, it was always an area that we discuss even nowadays is what could we have done better when we started off Zoma. And I look, at times we do discuss, like, we could have took in foreign investment or, investment from elsewhere. We were very of the opinion that we could run a very self-funded model and be in control of it, of ourselves. I definitely think we should have brought in someone in terms of like financial and management advice and guidance in the beginning, just to help budget and plan. And like we went from zero to well over 100, you know, like it was thousands in the space of a couple of months with COVID. And we probably had a massive amount of money in our bank account, but no idea of how to invest it, how to use it, how to manage it. And probably, look, I'll be honest, wasted a lot of that funding and money. We developed out a state-of-the-art office now in Dundalk, right in the heart of Dundalk, spent over $500,000 on that building. But when we bought the building and went in to do it up, when we started construction work, the wall fell down. And, you know, so straight away, I was listening to the news talk coming up and they're on about the wall they're rebuilding out in Buzz.
I hope it didn't cost that much to rebuild it.
Yeah, well, the building cost the whole refurbishment of it, but not one wall anyway. But coming to that, like, that was where our learnings of, like, we probably got ahead of ourselves, you know. Yeah. We had money in the bank, all that kind of stuff. And maybe a different area might have been a better investment. I think that guidance probably was something that we could have brought in the beginning. But look, we're still here, we're still standing, still in a very strong position, but definitely we could have looked at.
And tying on from that then, where are you now in relation to the vision that the three you had sitting in the pub back in 2019?
Oh, miles away. Like, we probably thought we might have had a customer base of 50 to 100 at that stage. Like, we probably have worked with up to 1,000 clients at this stage. We have an active book of hundreds of companies there that we're constantly working with. We would never have thought when we sat in that pub the brand and business that we've built to today. And, like, we've won awards after awards for the work that we're doing. Our customers are winning awards for the work that we've carried out. Some of the business that we've grown from literally an idea to employing hundreds of people now in the space of a couple of years, it's a really proud, you know, kind of and achievement to look back on and seeing what we've created and developed. We definitely didn't see, like, when we sat down and the three of us were like, where are we going to set up this office? I just built a new house at the time and I had a garage at the back and we converted into an office for three people. After a couple of months, it was an office for five people. After a couple of months after that, it was no longer we can be in this office. We have to look elsewhere.
You can only take hot desk in a certain
Exactly, yeah. So, look, things change rapidly. Environment changes rapidly. Like, you look at how digital changes so rapidly as well. We never would have seen where we are today. And look, our vision now is that we're really, really strong in Ireland, the Northeast, especially, and in that M1 corridor between Belfast and Dublin. But there's so much more businesses we can be working with. We've recognised as well, I think it's something as you go along in your business journey, is to make sure you're getting the right type of client in the door. So we are always like, let's get hundreds of clients. You might actually be better only having 50 A clients.
But real marquee ones.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's where we're probably shifting at the minute is, okay, it's great to say we have all these clients, but in terms of income and revenue, we might be better having 20 A clients
and maximising their wallet share.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, they know investment in digital works. They know the return out of it, whereas we could be wasting a lot of money and resources with, you know, the smaller clients, smaller business. So that's where we are at the minute, is, you know, our vision going forward. But we never would have thought we've got to where we are today, back in the pub in 21. Definitely not.
And you know, you talk about clients. What type of clients are we talking about? What, you know, are there names that we'd know and things like that?
Yeah, like, there's global names that we're working with. Like, there, Wuxi Biologics, one of the big pharma companies. You know, we manage and help with all their marketing in the European division. We work with clients, Viatel, one of the biggest telecommunication companies in Ireland, KSG, KPMG, we've worked with Microsoft, we've worked with so many different big companies nationwide and globally. But then we also have really, as I say, success stories where we start with someone with an idea, and one of them is like, I can think of as Nude Foods there. They're probably the largest ready-made food customer in meals in Ireland at the minute. They're in every Super Value you go to or wherever you get your groceries. And we literally met with them in a hotel and drew out the logo in front of them. And we started with a logo. They have one of the biggest, you know, ready food businesses in Ireland at the minute. So that's a really good example of how we started with something so small and it just flourished into something massive.
Has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. No, like, I don't deal with failure and loss very well at all. And it's probably my competitiveness, my sporting background. I really struggle with loss and with failure.
So do you hate losing or love winning?
I definitely hate losing more than I love winning. look, like when it comes from sport, like people always, like I read a lot of books with autobiographies of sporting people, and there's a real sense of relief when you win something. I think that's where I would be, is it's relief when you win something more, because the journey you go through and the hardship of loss, that when you actually come out with something, it's a win in that sense, and it's a relief. So look, I think that's a massive driver for me, is to not, in terms of, I would hate to think that we would fail or even decline, never mind fail, decline would be an absolute pain in the hole to me. I'd be scratching my head. I'd definitely not be sleeping at night then with that, you know. So it is a massive part, but it's a massive part of me personally, is that, and I think that comes from sport. And I drill that into everyone in Zoma, you know, that we cannot be seen failing or declining. We have a very powerful thing, it's called momentum. And we always say momentum is massive. You know, for any brand or any business, you need to keep momentum going. You need to keep your brand out there. And we were winning award after award. We were getting highlighted for projects. Our staff was growing, our new office launched. And then we hit a little bit of a lull for a couple of months. And from there, I was like, look, you could see the momentum, and even the staff, the creativity was starting to fall, because it wasn't bright and shiny lights the whole time. So I was like, okay, now we need to go and create some momentum again. And we looked at sponsorship assets. We looked at a whole new initiatives. We looked at rolling out maybe a new service, something that was going to spark it again and bring it to life. And there, just this year, we've become the main sponsor for our local League of Ireland team, Dundalk.
Going to ask you about that. What was the thinking behind the partnership with Dundalk?
Well, look, I played with Dundalk all through up my underage, and Chris as well, the other director, did as well. And it's at the heart of the town, and it's really only if you're from Dundalk, you'll see how powerful Dundalk is. You walk around the town of Dundalk, you'll see Dundalk jackets everywhere. It's a very unique fan base. It's something like I would probably compare to, like, I'm a Liverpool fan, but you see how strong Liverpool is, you know, in terms of their fans, the culture they have. Dundalk's very similar to that. It's the town or nothing, basically, you know. And we are at the heart of the town. We work with so many businesses around the town, and so many businesses that were involved with Dundalk we work with. So we were like, why are we not involved with Dundalk? So the opportunity came to us. Look, they were in a bit of a decline, obviously, and they had awful issues off the field and that. They've been resolved now, and look, they're excited to go ahead now. And I know the first division team, but it's a rebuild. Yeah. It's a rebrand nearly for them. And it's a really good time for Zoma to come in, hopefully, as the rebuild. And we're doing a lot of work with them off the field in terms of how to market themselves, brand themselves, how to get more of the community in. So it was a project that really appealed to us. And we've looked at sponsorship assets, you know, nationwide. And it's funny, you came back to the one locally.
Come back to local.
You know, it was, but it just seemed like fit and the right time for us to come in as a partner to them. And look, we're so excited for this partnership. It's a massive one for us, and real proud moment, you know. Like, my dad would have brought me on trips when I was with Dundalk to Barcelona. We played in the Gothenburg Cup in Sweden, which is a massive global event. And to think now that his son's business is on the shirt, I'm sure it's proud for him.
Do you take time to celebrate the successes? Like, an awful lot of companies, when they're growing fast, they're only looking one way, and they don't pause for breath sometimes and look back and at what they've achieved.
No, definitely not. I would say, like, when we opened our new office, we had a big event and a big party for opening, and it was probably the first time we actually recognised what we had done. But I don't think we recognise, and even there, when you started the podcast and you're reading out all the achievements and what we've done, like, I never really smile about that. I never really think about that. I'm nearly always thinking about how can we go one further, how can we get the next one, the next one, the next one. And that's probably something where I'm not recognising what we've done and achieved. And look, you can go back to sport again, you know, you win one title, you're always thinking about the next title, you know, or the next win, the next cup. It's probably just my mindset. I don't reflect on it and dwell on it. Because, look, you could get lost. You know, that could be where you start to decline. Oh, look, we've done all this. We've such a good business. We've such a strong brand in the industry. And then someone else comes in under your belt and takes a whip of it.
The boss of mine always said, he said, there's only 4 inches between a slap in the back and a kick in the arse.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great way to put it, though. It is. And, like, so many businesses probably get to the top. But it's when you're at the top, the fall is big. You know, like, that's where businesses come after you and see you. And we'd be better. Look, we're the mindset. We would look at a lot of industries and see monopolies in industries. And even look recently with the RIP.ie, you know, and the kind of backlash that they got with bringing out the fee for advertising on it and putting up your ads on it. And you've seen how such a monopoly they created in that industry, whereas they probably got to top. And now you'll be surprised the amount of competitors that are going to come in out of it. So that's where you can't sit at the
time. And it's a good question. I was going to ask you, you know, as you get bigger, do you think, you know, is there a risk that the level of innovation within the company falls?
Yeah, look, you always have to be aware of that. Yeah. But that's where you make sure you have the top talent yeah. in the company to make sure you're keeping driving that innovation. A huge area that I stress, and I was talking to you beforehand on this, is how you upskill your staff. Mm-hmm. A big problem there at the minute is when graduates come out of college, they're not having the right skill set to come into a digital marketing agency or probably into any marketing role in a company. Mm-hmm. Because the curriculum that they're learning is probably 3 or 4 or 5 years old mm-hmm. and that is probably obsolete now yeah. in terms of marketing. You think of AI and digitalization and all the modern day technology that's there. AI changes by the week nearly at mm-hmm. the minute. You know, you see the new Chinese AI one mm-hmm. and the crash of the NVIDIA stock mm-hmm. all in one day. It lost $600 billion. So like that's where something can come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But then a company might have to go and embrace that new technology or it'll fall behind. Mm-hmm. And I'd be always of opinion, I was given a seminar just this week on it, is you literally talk to a digital consultant or do some research on what's good for your business in terms of AI or whatever, type it into Google and put demo after it. Mm. It's the best way you're going to learn. You know, it's the only way you're going to learn
yeah.
because it's not in college, it's not in any degrees that you're going to do. You have to self-learn. Mm. And I'll, like an own personal experience of mine, when I started out, I had a degree in business and marketing, didn't have a degree in web design. Mm. I had no skill set in web design and I self-taught myself mm. through YouTube on web design. And I put myself up there as a really good web designer okay, now, yeah. but it was all self-taught. And that was probably my ambition, my drive to make sure I could, you know, upskill myself in something that was going to be really valuable. And it is, like, you know, it's a really valuable tool that grew our business in the beginning. But that's where definitely an area of innovation is. You have to be open to upskilling yourself and not be resting on the old because yeah. you'll fall behind massively.
So in that terms, in terms of the business and getting people into you, is it almost the point now you have to develop from within because people can only learn uh-huh. that skill set in there rather than you being able to go, oh, there's a lad over here and I know he's got, you know, 20 years experience in digital marketing. Well, he couldn't have because digital marketing didn't exist 20 years.
No, it is 100%. Look, you can have a certain skill set obviously coming out of college in terms of your computing skills and that. But we know when we take someone on, it's going to take them months before they're even at a level that we would feel comfortable doing projects within the company. And that's a big investment for us. And a lot of people that are coming in to our business are an age profile of, say, 20 to 30. They all have that travelling bug. They know, so you could spend a lot of time in training them for 3 to 6 months and then they're hopping off to Australia, Canada, whatever it is. Yeah. So we have to be conscious of that as well. Now, I think when we sat down and built Zoma and the brand of Zoma, we were always of that we wanted to have such a positive work environment and a really cool, fun place to work. And even like some of the best talent we have today would say they found us through Instagram. You know, they've seen how such a cool place it was to work, how there's such a good environment between the staff and all that kind of stuff. And they were like, that's where I wanted to work. And they were probably in a very comfortable, nice position where they were. Yeah. But it just appealed to them, you know. And we got really good talent from that. So that's something where, yes, we always have to be thinking, okay, we're bringing someone on board. How are we going to upskill them? The problem is, we have to upskill as well. So it's not only just the team we're bringing in. Nearly we have to upskill first, then upskill them, and then they're upskilling the next group coming in. So it's a conscious wheel because digital is changing, as I say, week by week, day by day. And unless you're at the top of your industry and being innovative, you're going to fall behind. And you see AI coming in nowadays. You see, you know, VR and augmented reality and all how this has changed business. Like they're... I was in Lanzarote there before Christmas and before we even got to the hotel, I got a video of here's my room, here's what you can expect of your room, here's the check-in experience all through VR. I was like, Jesus, this is mind-blowing where we're going today. You think you imagine sending that to someone 5 years ago? They'd be like, someone's in my room. That would have been the conscious of it. But that's where it's gone to today. And even like you see like Brown Thomas and all these big fashion brands, and they're all investing that you can nearly digitally wear the clothes now. Yeah. You know, it's frightening how it changes so quick. So it's so important that you're upskilling yourself constantly on systems, software, reading the news. Like I'd be one like my wife would always be like, you're always on the phone. It's just because the industry we're in. You know, I'm not on Facebook and Instagram, you know, scrolling through whatever shite that's on it.
It's nearly cat videos.
You know, it's nearly from a business point of view. I'm looking at, okay, what's this fella doing differently in America? What system is he using? What software
is he
using?
What can we bring into our business?
Exactly. And that's where, you know, I was saying, where do you get your media from? I get nearly my innovation, my business ideas from other people who are doing something new in terms of business and social or whatever it is. So you're always learning on the phone a lot, yes, and you need to take a break from the phone, whatever, but it's hard to get away from it because it's the only way you can learn and upskill yourself.
You know, the culture described in Zoma, do you think you can maintain it if you had... If we went from 15 employees a year today to 50 employees or to 70 employees, do you think you could still have that?
Yeah, I do think it is. Right. I think it comes from the management team, and I'd be a big believer if the management team are invested in it and involved in it, it's going to feed down the chain then to everyone else in the company. You have ways about it. Look, you're obviously going to have to tailor different social events, different whatever it is, to a bigger team. But the same principles and culture should be there within the company. You know, like, I'd be of the opinion, look, people might say this is stupid or funny, but I don't care if someone comes in 9 to 5, I just care if the work's done. You know, I'm not going to be standing at the door being like, you're 5 minutes late. You know, I'm very flexible to all of our team. People have stuff to get done, people have things to do, but I know if I have that approach, I know a lot of my team are in the evening time probably doing work. They might have something to do with the day, they might have families, they might have whatever it is. And that's where, maybe it's just the industry that we're in, you know, you can be a bit more flexible in terms of, obviously other industries you can't. But that's definitely something that, you know, rewards the staff, but also creates a really good environment there. And then, like, I think it's just the industry you're in, and because you work with so many different companies and brands, you're not doing the same thing over and over again. It's something very different every day. You know, now, as a CEO and in terms of financials and stuff, we're probably doing a lot of the same things over and over. But anyone below, you know, in management of design or anything like that, they're definitely working on different projects every day. And that's exciting. You know, they're not going to get bored. They're not getting stiff. You know, doing the same work over and over again. And that would definitely help with the culture within the company. And then, I'd be very of the opinion of, if the company is doing well, reward the staff for it doing well too. So if they're growing the business, and there's a brilliant example of a company in England, actually they sold the company, and the CEO gave some of the sales to his staff because he was like, I didn't get there by myself, it was the team that done it. And that's where I'd always be rewarding staff and reviewing staff on how their performance is and all that, because if they're making a really positive drive for Zoma, well, then there should be reward and benefit out of it.
There's an idea out there that, you know, the more successful you get, the greater the risk of distraction, right? And you go into areas that you shouldn't do. So I'm kind of interested in you explaining the move to launch Munched in the context of the Zoma business.
Yeah, so look, Munched came about, we were working...
We should say Munched is a food delivery app for people.
So like, how that came about is we were working with, it was actually over COVID, all the restaurant and takeaways had to go online, and we had our own CMS system that we were putting takeaways and restaurants on, and they were on the Just Eats, Deliveroo's, Uber Eats at the time, and we probably didn't take much notice, obviously. We just built a website for them, got the online ordering system working for them, and it integrated with Just Eat, Deliveroo and all them, and they did a really good product at the end of it. And then we got talking with our local takeaway, and he was telling us about, he put a couple of million they made online through their food ordering system, and he was going through the commissions that he was paying, that he was losing anywhere from 20 to 30% of a sale through a commission from the food ordering platforms. I couldn't get my head around this. Like, you see, you know, your Stripes and your payment platforms and all that, and they're like 1, 2, 3%. I was like, how are this, is this the model that's there at the minute? So I was like, look, there's an opportunity here for us to develop something out. And we said, okay, we're going to test pilot with the local takeaway that was beside us. And we built out an online food delivery app where, you know, you can go in and do all your ordering, your food, it links in with delivery, all that kind of stuff. And in the space, I think it was 6 months, he had saved 100,000 in commission fees. Our model comes in at a 1% commission model. We know we can run a very profitable business off a 1% model. And the actual benefits is he's in control of everything. So a huge problem with other online ordering platforms is data ownership. It's ownership of, you know, your emails of your customers. It's the delivery drivers, you know, all of them are subcontracted out. So your customer service, you could have the best fish and chips
in the door. If it arrives an hour late.
cold, well, your best service is gone.
Yeah.
So what he was like was, okay, I can actually take control of my own delivery service and employ my own delivery team and van and all that kind of stuff, because I'm making such a saving from this platform. And he has his own delivery network now and he's in control of it. He can give the best customer service. He can hire whoever he wants, the happy fella that's going to land up to your door with your pizza, you know, and create the best experience going. And that's rewarded because there's loyalty created then for that brand. You know, there's a remarketing then. Like, I know if you get a good fish and chips, you're probably not going to go somewhere else. You're probably going to keep going back to it because you usually only have the one takeaway on a Saturday or Friday night or whatever it is. And that's, you're going to make sure you want to get a good quality one. So we identified it. We rolled it out. We've tested it for a year and now the app is literally launching fully on iOS and Google Play Store next month. And we have huge ambitions for this brand. And going back to your point, do we see it as an area that could distract from Zoma? Yes, it can distract from Zoma, but it's such an area of opportunity for us, you know. And I know that I can bring a team in to help build Munched and take Munched on. You know, it's a very easy product to manage and sell or whatever and bring forward. So I am in the opinion, why would I not go for it when the opportunity is there? And I'm not going to stop there, to be honest, because there's so many different industries where there's, as I said, monopolies and people have built systems and software and are charging stupid fees and over-the-top commissions. And we're looking at other industries because we know, okay, we've done it, we've tested it, we've created a really good product here now. Why can we not do this for other industries and be a really big disruptor in the market? And that's our ambition going forward is, okay, look, we can have, and maybe it's our shift for Zoma as well, is if we have our 28 clients that we look after brilliantly for Zoma, but we can have four or five of these innovative products as well. Yeah. That could be a really good business model, you know, going forward. And it protects you. I know straight up when it comes to an economic downturn where the business is cut first, marketing, it always is, you know. So it's a protective as well. It's where if Munch is a really low cost product, any takeaway restaurant is going to look to make a saving. That's an attractive product for them in an economic downturn. They're obviously going to shift to that. So it could help actually flip your revenue for Zoma then because of it.
Yeah. How do you deal with setbacks in the business?
Not well.
Going back to the hate losing bit.
No, look, even like a bad experience with a client wouldn't sit well with me. You know, I'd always nearly investigate as to why was that. Was it something that we were doing? Was it something that we didn't deliver on? Was the client expectations weren't set right at the beginning? And it's nearly something where I have a process of dealing with a bad experience and a setback. Go through all these steps. If it fell on our side, we know how we can learn from it. We know how we can deal with it. We know how we can improve on it. Sometimes it wasn't on our side. Sometimes you just can't please that person, you know, and that's just the way it is in life, you know. But no, look, I don't deal well with loss, setback, failure, anything like that. And it's, I always see it as an opportunity to learn from it. Like we had experienced, you know, when it went into legal route and all that kind of stuff. And it was a really hard, just a really hard thing for us to take on board, because we knew we'd done such a really good job for that client. But it opened our eyes to what can potentially happen. It opened our eyes to how we have to legally protect a lot of the stuff we were doing. You know, we were just running around being like, this is great, look at all we're doing. But we never thought of the repercussions it could have if something bad happened. And we learned from it. We got over it, just about. But it definitely has a big effect on how we go about our operations now today. And that's where, like, even like simple setbacks, like, look, you could lose a client. You could, and look, sometimes people would look at, clients might look at, they've worked with your agency for 5 years. They might just want something different. They might just want a different voice. They might want a different outlook. They might want whatever it is. They might have changed the marketing manager and this new marketing manager worked with someone else previously. You just never know why the change might be there, but you just have to get on with it. You have to deal with it and learn from it. That's the big thing.
And how do you approach change then?
In the business or in terms
of business,
change in the business? Look, I think it's because of the business we're in. you're always changing, you're always adapting to new technology, you're always adapting to new people coming in, you're growing the whole time. So there's new cultures, new personalities, there's all that coming in. So I think it's a business and a brand full of change. Mm. So it's probably easier for us to change because we always are.
Yeah,
We're going into companies telling them to have to change. So if we can't change ourselves, there's something wrong. So it's definitely where we need to be like, okay, look. And there's probably areas like it took us a long time when we go back to when I was talking about the, you know, the Excel sheets and your dockets. Like that was us. I remember back in the office at the back of the house and I had a whiteboard, not the whiteboard with the two websites, I had a whiteboard with probably 50 websites and we were wiping them off as we went. And you think of it like if something had gone or something disappeared or like in terms of invoicing and a job could have been missed, and there probably was, you know, and it took us a long term to embrace changing into a digital system. And now we have our CRM system and our accounting software and they're all linked together through Zapier and all that kind of stuff. So like the minute an email comes in, it goes through a flow digitally, you know, and but that did take us a long time to get because you get so stuck up in your own operations. Yeah. And even now, like when you talk about Munch and the product is Munch, the biggest problem takeaways and restaurants have is they're so stuck in their operations of getting the next bag of chips out that they're not even thinking of the money they might be losing on that bag of chips.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where you need to be open to change, definitely. Yeah.
What gets more credit in your success? Luck or hard work?
Luck or hard work? I think, like, because of the brand we've built with Soma, there's always the perception, like, geez, they look like they're having a great time in there, or they're doing any work at all.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not true. Like, we've built that culture there, and it's something that we know it gets the best out of our team and staff. So people probably don't think we're the most hardworking, but we are. Look, I know the work.
Deliver the results, that's the end of the day, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. You know, and how you deliver them results is the biggest thing. And we have a textbook and a portfolio of results that we've, you know, proven that we're one of the best in the industry. Like, I know the brand gets all, like, it's such a noticeable brand. It's such a noticeable name there now. With the sponsorships we even activated now and that, it's recognised nationally now. And people start to say, oh, that's your boy from Zoma, or you're your man from Zoma. So you're starting to really get that
recognition,
you know,
there,
100%.
Yeah.
And even like when you go in and talk to businesses now, they nearly know about you, or they've came across you somewhere or seen you. So that helps in terms of obviously business
development.
Kind of
pushing on an open door a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Like in terms of like the business development team would always say it's easier to sell Zoma now than what it was a couple of years ago, you know, because we have such a portfolio and a brand presence there now. And people don't are always like, oh, how do I get my brand out there and how do I do it? We're like organically you can do it so well, and that's where I go back to when I started out going door to door and knocking and putting out flyers. People buy from people, and that's it, you know. Like if you and in terms of recruitment point of view, when I interview someone, everyone comes with a piece of paper out of college, you know. So
how are you going to differentiate
yourself? I don't really, I'll be honest, I'm not being blunt about it. I don't care about that piece of paper. I care about your personality, how you're going to fit in this team. What are you going to bring to Zoma that's going to be different to John or Mary or whatever it is? And that's where the best talent stands out. You just find something with them. And I'll never forget, we had an interview and a guy came in with a tablet and done a full presentation on how he's going to change the digital team in Zoma. So I was like, wow, like straight away. I didn't even need to ask questions. He'd done it for me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where he was very clever in his interview coming in and what he was going to do and bring to the team. And that's something that is vital, you know, in terms of, and so many people probably get caught up in the degree and what they're doing. If you're looking for a job in Zoma, put it out there, I'll reward your personality far more than anything else nearly, because I know if you're a good, hard working, right attitude around someone, there's a good opportunity you're going to succeed. And we've hired a lot of people that probably hadn't the best whatever degree and skill set, but we've upskilled them to be a valuable asset within the company now.
Right, we've come to the black book time.
Oh God,
you're looking very nervous.
Yeah, I don't know what's in this.
Neither do I.
No,
Right. Oh, this would be a good one. If you didn't work in your current job, what would you be doing instead?
Well, I had a go at the farming and agriculture end with my dad's business, and just didn't work out. So it definitely wouldn't be in that industry. Where would I be? I'd probably be in the fitness industry, I would say. Yeah. I think the, and look, it's easy to say that now where you see where the fitness and industry has gone to, but even beforehand, I had done an online degree or online course on personal training and fitness. And it wasn't even just to do with Zoma, you know, highlighting and rewarding fitness and well-being and that. It was all to do with, I just love sport and I love how athletes get the best out of each other. I love seeing how, you know, how you can condition yourself and make yourself a better person. And like, I have my own 3-year-old, and like, when I'm training in the gym, I need to take her out there to see what I'm doing, because I want her to continue on and see how important that is for her development and for her to be strong. So I'd probably say what industry I would get into was probably the fitness and PT industry or something like that. Yeah.
Alright, well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest David Kieran. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.